On today's episode, well, I have been looking forward to connecting with this man somewhere other than Twitter for a very long time. His approach to covering figure skating is, by my estimation, as fair and balanced as it can be. He has 20 years of experience in the field as a skater, coach, choreographer, and USFSA judge. You can connect with him on social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Rocker Skating. His website is www.rockerskating.com. I am thrilled to welcome Jackie Wong. Jackie, thank you so much for talking to me.
So excited to talk to you, PJ.
I mean, finally, we're not typing at each other. How could I miss?
We're not typing each other, and we're not missing each other for some reason at Worlds when we were both there at the same time.
Which is just insane, I know. But you know what it's like better than anybody, or at least as well as I do, that you think you've got all this time, but if you're going to actually watch skating and cover it and talk to the skaters and be everywhere, then that doesn't leave you a whole lot of time for doing the fun stuff like, Mai Tais in the bar. I don't even know what a Mai Tai is. I just said that for effect.
I prefer a stiff bourbon.
Good for you. I want to know all about you. So tell me, starting from when you were a skater, what was your discipline? What was your favorite jump? I'm assuming you were a free skater, were you?
I was definitely a free skater. I did single skating, and generally it was, it was more for the love of the sport than for competing. Like, I never particularly cared for competing, even though I'm a very competitive person. But I trained a lot. I trained a lot on things that interested me, which didn't allow me to be a very all-around skater. And that was kind of the beginnings of what I was doing. And then I stopped skating for a bit. And then when I got back into skating, that was when I was in college. And that was when I decided, like, look, I'm going to try to actually become a skater and basically start all over, like relearned stroking, relearn edges, relearn like my single jumps. You know, I was coming from a time when I was forcing, you know, triple toes, triple sows, for no reason, and then getting back into it to like relearn my singles, just to get the basics right. So it really got me to appreciate what real skating and good skating is, and I can't ever purport to be a good skater, but it was a great learning experience, and it was something that, you know, I competed in college, I coached folks in college, and then afterwards it was on to commentating about things.
Now tell me, what did you study in college?
I was an economics and urban studies major, and minored in computer science. I was kind of like I didn't really know what I was doing for a while.
And yet you couldn't fix my Skype.
Well, I said I minored in computer science.
Okay, I really minored, so minor that in fact I had to get my daughter to help me. But that's okay. We're here. We're talking. It's great.
Yeah.
So then you went on and did you coach for very long?
No, it was some side coaching. I was doing coaching for fellow college athletes that I was competing with, and I did choreography for some of them as well. It was a very short stint, and also the US figure skating judging I did for probably 4 or 5 years. As a lot of judges know, it's a labor of love, and it takes a lot of time out of you that you may not have. So, I figured my contributions to the sport would be better served in social media, I guess.
So tell me about the start. I mean, your stats are very, very impressive on your website. You've got 7,500 followers on Twitter, and it says from your media kit, which I downloaded, and really I'm very impressed by, 90% growth in this last season with over 40 million tweet impressions. Could you have imagined when you started rockerskating.com that social media was going to explode the way that it has, certainly even over the last couple of years?
You know, I would say it's been quite a surprise, right? I think there's some times when I know that the information that I'm providing on social media is valuable and that it would gain traction, and then sometimes I'm like, oh, that actually got a lot of impression. So, you know, it's interesting what people find interesting, to be honest.
Yes.
You know, I think the skating world is always interested in, you know, consistent coverage and kind of reliability that I try to provide. So I think that's where that comes from.
Do you find in your coverage, do you have any kind of biases? Like, I like when I'm watching men's figure skating, I love watching the jumps, honestly.
Yeah.
The jumps, and I'm never as interested in the spins, because honestly, the spin positions now, in order to get the highest levels, are not very nice looking, a lot of those weird kind of pretzel spins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Yeah, absolutely. There are biases, and I try to tamp those down as much as I can, right? It's figure skating. It's a subjective sport. It's something that people are very passionate about. And I wouldn't be here if I wasn't passionate about some aspect of skating. But I love the jumps, and that was kind of what brought me into skating. But to be honest, like, I love some of the spins too. Like, the there are, for me, I think this is an opinion that may not be a majority opinion, but for me, I think spins have dramatically improved, especially from, you know, kind of the early mid 90s era, when they were sort of throwaways, and you definitely heard commentators being like, well, you know, they're doing a camel spin, and this is their resting time, and there's no rest now for spins. I would just totally be, if I did one of those spins, I would like lie down on the ice afterwards.
I'd lie down and cry.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, besides that, it's like, you know, there are definitely highlights for me in every discipline, and you know, the lifts these days that the pairs are doing are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, for me, IJS has done a lot of good things for the sport, and I think I'm one of the folks who do tend to side with the new system, I guess the current system.
Yes. Or the system, as I like
to
call
system,
it.
The system, exactly. It's what, been 16 years, or 14 years, and people call it the new judging system.
Well, it's, but it, you know, when you think that the other system lasted for as long as it did, that part, I think, is very, you know, it's always interesting to try and talk about things. And there are still people who go on and on at some length saying that the 6.0 system was better.
I know.
So I think, I mean, certainly for being able to create, you know, good guys and bad guys, and that whole sort of emotional drama, I kind of understand it, because people know that 6.0 means perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I still think that, you know, you see some of the scores, like what Yuzuru Hanyu did, you know, with those back-to-back performances and those insanely high scores that will not be broken for quite some time. We're getting a real sense that we don't know how high up is up. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no clear ending to the story. So from that standpoint, the other thing that I really love, and it goes across all the disciplines, is footwork. Because footwork, according to many skaters in years gone by, footwork was a bit of a throwaway as well.
Yep.
A place for you to just kind of like, do some steps here and there. The fact that skaters have to have the quality of turns that they do, and the variety and the musicality, I think can be hugely challenging.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the system is not perfect, right?
It's evolving.
It's definitely evolving. And I would actually counter your thoughts about Han's 330 score. I think it actually could be beaten this year.
Do you think so?
Yeah, and I think it could be beaten by Yuzuru Hanyu himself. I mean, he's planning a 2-quad short and a 4-quad free skate. So,
wow.
You know, we'll see how that goes. It's gonna be. I think we're gonna see more mistakes this season than last.
Well, I kind of always see that this season, the one that precedes the Olympic season, is always the one where people sort of have that last chance to try stuff on for size. Because next season, it's for keeps.
Exactly.
So, you know, I, as much as it's not very much time, it's a whole lot of time.
Yeah, a lot of things can change in a season.
Boy, isn't that the case? when you're looking at ice dance, let's say, because we're taping this at the conclusion of the Nebelhorn event. Do you think that we're seeing the kind of variety? I thought that at one point Ice Dance was just a little bit kind of ooey-gooey and everybody kind of doing the, you know, Young Love's Dream kind of program. I think that we're seeing lots more variety, and I think that there's room for it to expand. What are you seeing? What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I'm not going to say that I am any sort of Ice Dance expert, but I'll give you my opinions anyway.
Sure.
You know, I think there was a time, like you said, when Ice Dance was much more scripted, I think also when the IJS came about, there was a point when Ice Dance became more scripted in the other way, right? Like everybody sort of had the same lifts, or everybody sort of, you know, were doing the same twizzles, or, you know, the footwork wasn't what was there, and it was like a complete package, but programs started looking the same. And I think the last few years, we've really seen, there's been kind of a rebirth of Russian ice dance, and there's been kind of a progress of North American ice dance. Like, they're very much in two different camps, but there's a, you know, there are people out there who are doing very innovative things, and you know, it's great to see, you know, the Pipers and Pauls of the world who's bringing a little quirkiness into ice dance. And it's great to see the, you know, Tessa and Scott back to kind of bring that precision that they've always brought. You know, it's great to see the Shibutanis, you know, really just like taking it to a very different level. Yeah, they could have totally thrown in the towel a couple of years ago when it seemed like, you know, they were just, you know, the judges weren't giving the time of day, but they're bringing a different thing. You know, the Papadakis and Cicerone are bringing, you know, just another side of it, and like Chalk and Bates, like this season we just saw Nebelhorn like bringing a different side with the David Bowie program, right? So It's kind of amazing. I really enjoy and look forward to watching Ice Dance. But, you know, I won't do the play-by-play for it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What I love is the fact that Ice Dance, it's no longer one size fits all.
Yeah.
There's room for sort of everybody. Now, it's funny. If I could call to mind a program that for me started to turn the corner, let's say, from everybody looking a little bit the same, and it's with no disrespect at all because these are very elite athletes, I would have to say one of the free dances that jumps out of my head is Marie-France Dubreuil and Patrice Lauzon skating to Etta James.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought to myself, it told a story in the most kind of wonderful way, and I love something that I go, oh yeah, I get that, which, you know what, I have to tell you, Izuru Hanyu's program last year, one of my all-time favorites, I just was mesmerized by it, and the accuracy of the Japanese movement, and it was Shailen Bourne who did the choreography. I love it when stuff is just...
It works.
Not what I'm expecting. Yeah.
I completely agree. You saying that program kind of reminded me of saying that the Caitlin Landrieu's Je Suis Malade program that, you know, what I called...
Yo Soy Maria, too. I mean,
what I called the original Malade, and now, you know, there are Malades all over the place. But that was a program that I just remember watching and being like, you know what? This works for me. You know, it had everything that I wanted to see in a free dance.
What do you say to people who say that the sport of figure skating is dying?
I say they're probably right in some ways.
Okay, tell me how.
I don't know if it's so much dying, right? There's always peaks and valleys in the maturity of a sport.
Yes.
And in a lot of ways, figure skating is a very mature sport. You can kind of draw a lot of parallels to business, right? Like there are kind of startup companies and there are mature companies, and the mature ones are always the ones who are trying to play catch up with the new stuff that's coming along. And you know, there's just so many new things, and there's so many more sports now than there were even 20 years ago, right? So I think interest goes up and down, and I think just simply based on what we saw in Boston Worlds last season, like, you know, I saw interest in figure skating go up, like, you know, to a point that I haven't seen in quite a while. Right, and that's a very U.S.-centric version of the story that I'm telling right now, but I think that is something when people say skating is dying, that's what they focus on, because you know there's generally been a very U.S.-centric or at least North American-centric side to that argument.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because when people say that to me, I always say to them, well, except that it may be that, you know, we haven't seen the kind of interest in the buildings and, well, just interest, you know, across the board that we used to see, let's say, in the 80s and the 90s. However, it doesn't mean globally that there isn't interest. I mean, otherwise, you know, the houses wouldn't be packed in Japan and Korea in particular.
Yeah.
And when the Nationals for Korea sells out in 30 seconds online for tickets, there's got to be interest. So I always say that we have to, when fans sort of challenge me about that, I just say, well, we have to look at the bigger picture.
Right.
And the bigger picture includes the whole world.
Exactly.
And I think that this whole social media thing is a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, I would totally say that's where I also disagree with folks, right? Japan, mm-hmm. Japan is huge with figure skating. I mean, it's just the level of interest and enthusiasm there is pretty amazing. And you know, I tweet something about Satoko Miyahara, and you know, it blows up in Japan, right? Like it's one of those things where that level of enthusiasm you just don't see in the U.S. And it has a lot to do with the fact that it is still fairly you know, kind of a novel sport in Japan, right? Like the Midori Itos of the world started the whole craze, but that's been all of 25 years. The you know, figure skating in the U.S. The dominance started, you know, half a century and earlier ago, right? So, you know, I think Japan and Korea are certainly kind of the emerging markets for skating. I think Russia is still huge, you know, with skating.
I think so too.
And that you see that, right? You see that in the skaters that are coming out of the Russian programs, and it's just, you know, when you have a certain dominance, that's when you start bringing the talent. It's a cycle, and it's a cycle that kind of continues to feed back on itself.
You know, it's so interesting. I have conversations lots of times here in Canada, and people will say, well, what about Canadian women? Why don't we have any women? I said, we
do
have women.
We do.
But skating is hard, people. It's a really hard sport.
And you know what? Yes, skating is hard, and there are a lot of things you can do besides skating, right? Like, and that's partially, you know, when you give kids the freedom of choice to enter whatever they want to enter, that's what happens when you have a choice of doing what you want to do. So, you know, unless you want to go into some sort of kind of, you know, dictatorial machine of sports creation or athlete creation, it's just you just aren't going to see the types of narrowing of sports that we used to see, because there are just so many things that you can do in the world.
Do you feel that synchronized skating has offered an outlet and an opportunity to skaters to stay into the sport? Here in Canada, we have some skaters who start off as synchronized skaters in the way that they do in Sweden and Finland.
Yeah.
How do you feel that synchronized skating has advanced the story of figure skating in the United States?
I think synchro still has some catching up to do in the States. And again, I will not purport to be a synchro expert by any means.
Sure.
But you know, the there's as with a lot of different areas of fields or sports, there's like a pecking order when it comes to what you want to go into, and it right at this point, like there. It's rare to see folks being like, oh, I want to start off as a synchronized skater.
Okay.
But, you know, I think there are people who do that. And you know, as it grows in prominence, I think that's going to be a lot more, it's going to be a lot more of a viable option. But I think right now where we see synchronized skating most really is in colleges, right? Like it kind of brings a different level of skating to collegiate skating. I think that I've seen that come out of collegiate programs a lot more.
Yes.
And that's really interesting to see. And then there's also things like theater on ice, right? Like that's kind of coming up, and the types of different programs that allow skaters to continue skating and to continue, you know, doing what they love on the ice. I think that's a really good sign. It's just that I don't know if competitively it's really the focus right now that I see.
I think that it's probably going to still take some time. If we think about it, ice dance didn't enter the Olympics until 1976. And, you know, the other disciplines were in the Olympic Games long before that, but ice dance wasn't deemed to be athletic enough.
Sure.
So I think that people's minds are changing, and certainly they have very, very enthusiastic supporters. You just have to go to one synchro competition. We'll go together, Jackie. That's what we'll do.
I know, right? We should do that.
It would be so much fun. Yeah. Okay, I want to know the moment that you decided rockerskating.com. And tell me how you came up with the name.
So the moment I decided that was actually not too long ago. I actually wrote for Examiner.com for quite a while. And that was kind of my platform. And it kind of propelled me and allowed me to have some sort of voice in the world, in the skating world. And it was really kind of, maybe a year and a half ago that I sort of thought, you know, it's I kind of want my own platform. I've kind of put together enough of a social media presence to be able to strike out on my own. So that's where that came from. As far as the name, I really enjoy doing rocker turns. And you know,
you're the one.
Yeah. I love rockers much more than I like counters. Right. So
really?
Yeah.
See, I like counters if I had to do either, and I'd fall down if I had to do either one of them right now. But, it's funny cause I should like a rocker turn because, you know, the rocker foxtrot, I love that dance. But anyway, so you just came up with rockerskating.com. And I love your little graphic because it's a very nice rocker, actually.
Yeah, it's actually the rocker that I can't really do as well. I'm much more of a right forward rocker.
And this is the left forward outside.
Exactly.
See, you thought I might not know, but
no,
I do.
Of course you know.
Do you think, see, I used to go to the boards to try and see sort of what was going on, what people were talking about, what the sort of current mood was, and also sort of for results and whatever. I rarely go to boards now anymore, if at all, because I go to people like you, because I can get the results. I can see what's going on. I can see how people are interacting with you. I think that the evolution of social media to a point where we are all engaged in sort of one-on-one discussions is of more interest to me. How do you view the difference between, let's say, what you do and what goes on a board?
I mean, I think what you get with what I do and what a lot of people do on social media is just the live aspect of it. And it's, you know, in the computer information era, quote unquote. I mean, in this kind of social media world that we live in right now, it's instant gratification is so important. And yes. You know, if you told me 10 years ago that I would not be okay with having tape delayed broadcasts or knowing that there's going to be spoilers and I'm going to wait 6 hours to be spoiler free. Like, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been like, oh yeah, of course I would totally wait that long just so that I could feel like I'm watching things live. But now it's like, you know, ever since about 5-6 years ago, everything is being streamed live. Everything is available, online, you know, all the information is there. Like you can't go without getting spoilers. So it demands that kind of live, you know, up to the minute kind of information. And I think it engages the fans even more. I don't think I've seen quite the enthusiasm in skating, you know, that as I've seen in the last couple of years. I think a lot because there is such this like live, immediate interaction kind of thing that's going on now.
Well, and it is very much a conversation, whereas I felt often on the boards that although it's a conversation, it's a little bit disjointed.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you and I are relating to each other back and forth, other people can certainly join in, but it's definitely a conversation in that almost traditional sense, which I really like.
Yeah, and I think the boards also, you know, you tend to get some very dominant voices and some very not, you know, like a lot of people are kind of like hanging out in the background. I think with social media, it's less of that. Like I try to engage as much as I possibly can through my, you know, constant typing. But, you know, I find that aspect of what I do to be the most rewarding, like that I'm actually having an impact in the skating world, as opposed to just kind of sending articles or whatever out into the ether and not really knowing what people are reacting to it.
Do you find yourself responding to people for sort of like positive, negative, or neutral?
Well, say that again.
So I guess what I'm asking is if a fan contacts you via Twitter or Facebook, and let's just say that they disagree with you, how do you feel about that?
You know, the disagreements happen, right? I think that's the beauty of having a somewhat objective and somewhat subjective sport, that it isn't always a cut and dry kind of answer. And I'd certainly have welcomed disagreements, and you know, I certainly am not always right, though I try to be as objective as I can be. But you know, sometimes people call me out on things, and if it's the right thing to do, then I certainly take that criticism to be something that I should work on. But you know, I think where I am not a huge fan is when people just kind of come at you because they have some sort of subjective bias, and you just don't quite jive with their subjective bias, right? So, you know, when it gets personal, that's where I draw the line.
Me too. I'm happy to talk to you all day long about kind of, you know, this skater versus that skater, this competition versus that competition. But the minute there's name calling or you say that I'm stupid because I don't agree with you, I may very well be stupid. I mean, seriously. But if you are able to defend your point of view, whether I agree with it or not, then I'm okay. But where you're right, I always say there's room for everybody just because that we don't have this stuff going on. Sorry about that. Just because we don't agree doesn't mean that you're right and I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually remember there was at Nationals this year. I was U.S. Nationals. I had posted a video of Alexa and Chris doing a triple twist, and somebody on Instagram was like, "No, can't you see that's a quad twist?" And I'm like, I can literally show you frame by frame that is a triple twist, and it just like that like back and forth just went on for a while, and I was just like, okay, you know, like just. I don't understand. Like I showed you their triple twist and I showed you their quad twist side by side, and one obviously has one fewer rotation than the other. Like, what are you debating me about? So.
Oh, it's so funny when people just come up with stuff. And I think sometimes people just do just to see if you'll bite.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
So that part I find kind of hilarious.
You don't feel like you have you've made any impact until you have trolls, right? You know. So.
I know those rascals, those rascally rabbits. Professionally, tell me what it is that in 5 years' time, what would you like to be doing? Where do you see yourself as far as your skating career is concerned, or your life in skating, rather?
I mean, my life in skating might actually bring me back to the ice. I've been kind of itching to get back on the ice in some capacity. Like, I'm obviously not training for anything, but I would love to feel like I am returning to what I loved doing, which was skating. That said, I really don't know where Rocker is going to evolve into in 5 years' time. I would love to continue providing great coverage for the skating world, and kind of evolving with the times as needed. But as long as there is kind of a need for an objective eye out there, I think I'll keep doing it.
Now tell me, give me, let's say, a list of three programs or even five, if you come up with that, as a spectator, not as your analyst, but that particularly stand out for you in some way.
Like of all time.
Of all time. And it's, as I said, Marie-France and Patrice, I can still see that costume. I can still get the feeling that they made me feel from that Etta James program. Yeah. So it's just, it's not about champions. It's not about whatever. It's just about what has totally captivated you.
Captivation. So... Kurt Browning's Class of Blanca program, that is certainly one of the highlights, right? Like that program got me into skating.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to tell him.
let's see what else. You know, I think there are a lot of Michelle Kwan programs out there that I would bring up, but I think 2003 when she was at Worlds. And what was that? That was her last world title. And uh-huh. In D.C., it was like the crowd was just something else, right? And that program was really the one where I felt like, more than any of the other ones, and a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but more than any of the other programs, that was where she really brought the passion for the skating and like it just projected to every single seat in that audience, and I get goosebumps thinking about it right now.
Wow.
What else? I think most recently, Ashley Wagner's free skate at Worlds, that was, I don't know, it was something that I didn't think I would experience at Worlds, but it was just this incredible, the program itself was amazing.
Beautifully constructed, for sure,
but just the way that she sold it to the audience, the fact that it was the last program of the last competition at Worlds, and the fact that like the audience, the home ice audience was just like all about it. That was something that just stands out. And I think, there are a lot of other programs that have that effect, right? And it really depends on whether or not you're in the arena, you know, the situation, and that to me is what kind of brings everything together.
You were at the very start of the season. What is your busiest couple of weeks?
My busiest couple of weeks has to be the end of January. So U.S. Nationals happens, Canadians happen at the same time.
I am
the last, two or three seasons I've been at U.S. Nationals, I have been live tweeting both events at the same time. So I'm literally watching U.S. Nationals live in front of me and then watching Canadians on my computer in front of me, just like in a different line of sight, and tweeting about both at the same time. And that I get so much out of that in terms of just like this adrenaline of live tweeting multiple events at the same time. Oh, and Europeans is happening at the same time too. So that becomes super busy. And I'm also super sports nut. So Australian Open's happening. There's conference championships in football, American football. There's so many things going on that weekend those 2 weeks that
yep.
I need to take like a whole month off after that happens.
What are you looking forward to most in this season?
Oh boy, I'm really looking forward to this quad race that's happening. You know, I think we were talking about this at the beginning. We really love the jumps. I think the last season was huge in terms of what the men were showing off with the new quads, with the multiple quads. And I think this season is they're going to take it to another level, yet again another level. Quad LUTs, quad flip, they'll almost certainly be a quad loop landed this season.
I think so.
And well, today at the Junior Grand Prix, Alexei Krasnoza stood up a quad loop, but stepped out of it. But it was fully rotated. So whether or not that gets ratified, we'll have to see, right? Kurt's quad toe had a turnout, and that got ratified as the first one, right? So,
yep.
So this one might. So we'll see what happens with the ISU. But that's a storyline I'm interested in. The storyline of Tessa and Scott coming back and kind of figuring out what place they have in the ice dance world right now, that will be an interesting one for me.
I can't wait to see it unfold, that is for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, my last question, which is my very favorite question, I want to know from you, finish the sentence, please. Skating is?
Life.
You know what, Jackie Wong, it is well worth the wait to finally get a chance to talk to you. Thank you so much, and have a great season, and I'm sure we'll be in touch on Twitter.
Thank you. Really enjoyed talking to you, PJ.
You too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.